control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control. Stars look very different today. For here am I sitting in a tin can, far above the world. Planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Before we start the show, we'd like to take a moment to send our condolences out to the families and the victims of the Fort Hood tragedy. Mike, you've got something to say?
Yeah, I've been, as most people have, we've been following this. And as the president said in his, when he talked about it on national TV, he said that, you know, it's a sad event when a soldier dies overseas in battle, but it's horrifically tragic when a soldier dies at home in what should be the safety of the barracks or of the military base. And as a former military person myself, it's unfathomable to me, something like this could happen. And, my heartfelt sympathy goes out to not just the family members, but the soldiers, that work and, lived with these gentlemen and these other soldiers for their time. This is just something that just is beyond my scope of thought, to be honest with you.
It is. When I read about it, it was very, very shocking and very, very sad. And, I think it needed to be acknowledged. So guys, forgive, us for starting the show on a sad note. But it was something that really needed to be addressed.
And with that being said, let's go ahead and start stirring the cauldron.
Okay.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
No one would have believed in the early years of the 21st century that our world was being watched by intelligences greater than our own. That as men busied themselves about their various concerns, they observed, and studied. The way a man with a microscope might scrutinize the creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacency, men went to and fro about the globe, confident of our empire over this world. Yet, across the gulf of space, intellects vast and cool and unsympathetic regarded our planet with envious eyes. And slowly and surely, their plans against us.
Well, that's how Hollywood perceives aliens. That, of course, was from War of the Worlds, one of the most recent versions of it. But we're talking tonight to Michael Horn, an award-winning film director who is the authorized American media representative for the Billy Meier Contacts. And we're going to be talking about the Billy Meier story, UFOs and the prophecies from outer space. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Billy, he's a Swiss farmer who has taken hundreds of the most astounding photos of UFOs. But beyond that, he's been in contact with extraterrestrials since the age of 5. And given the fact that Billy is now in his 70s, I believe, that's quite a while. And throughout the years, he's allegedly been aboard UFO ships numerous times. And his story is an enigmatic journey that has resulted in him becoming the messenger for an advanced race of beings known as the Plagiarian. I think I said it right. And contrary to the clip that we just heard in the opening, it's my understanding that this particular race is here to help us and not have us for lunch. Now, you might have heard my guest Michael Horn on George Norrie's Coast to Coast and other shows talking about Billy and his amazing story. And I'm pleased that he's with us here tonight. And if you guys have any questions for Michael, and I'm sure as the story unfolds, you will, please send them by private message to either me or Mike Lear. So this is a fascinating story, and this is a fascinating guest. So please join me in welcoming Michael Horn. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here. Very glad.
Well, I saw the DVD, the Billy Meier story, the other day, and it like I said, the best word that I can describe it is fascinating. But how did you get acquainted with Billy?
Well, actually, it started in 1979. I walked into the Bodie Tree Bookstore over there in West Hollywood and Melrose. There was
we
all know that bookstore, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, we do.
And I saw the clearest photos of UFOs I'd ever seen, and I just, in a moment, knew that, okay, this is authentic. Now, I like to say that in the ensuing 30 years, while I still claim that the case is, you know, quite to me, obviously authentic, I base it on far more than just a, you know, visual take on the, you know, on the photographs. So from that point on, within 7 years of that, 1986, I obtained about 1,800 pages of transcripts that are of Myers' conversations that he claims are with the extraterrestrial people. And they were amazing. They were the early English translations, a bit hard to read, but full of fascinating, fascinating information. Within that year, I met another fellow who was into this, and we made a video called The Pleiadian Connection, which is still out there and doing things. And then I started to do my own presentations of it in about 87, 88, and I've been doing these presentations, live lectures, anywhere from 1 to 4 hours in length. And in 2000, I decided to go to Switzerland to actually meet Billy. I did, and I've been over there 11 times in these past 10 years. And about, I guess, 4 years ago or so, I asked if I could officially represent them. And that means that I would bring his information to the world as best I could as one person, the way he wanted it, basically the way they had written it and presented it and proved it, as long as I could reserve the right to disagree or say I don't know about something or other, and you know I wouldn't be a you know some kind of a party hack on it, and that I would do it voluntarily, that I would not ask them to pay me or vice versa for doing that representation. And so that's really kind of the story. I continue to do this and to lecture not only in the U.S. but you know English-speaking world, Australia, England, Canada, U.S. I hope to be going to some other countries too where I can do presentations, and that's kind of the basic part.
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about where this all began with Billy. His encounters with, and is it Pleiadian? Am I saying it right?
Well, they actually pronounce it Pleiadian. The J is pronounced more like a Y, so.
Okay.
Pleiadian, yes.
Okay, well, his encounters with them began when he was just 5 years old, when he met an extraterrestrial named Svoth. Now, some people would argue that a five-year-old has no credibility in such things, but that was just the beginning. Did he ever tell you how that first encounter came about?
Well, yes, actually, it's kind of known this way, that he and his father were outside one day in 1942. He's 5 years old, and they see a huge silver disc come flying through the sky and then, you know, going off and disappearing, and he asks his dad what it is. His father says, I don't know. I think it could be a secret weapon from Hitler. And they kind of left it at that. Shortly thereafter, young Edward Albert Meyer starts hearing a voice speaking to him in his head, and you know, kind of naturally stops him in his little tracks at 5 years of age, and he's a bit, you know, enchanted, perplexed about it, a little bit disturbed that maybe there's something wrong with him, but he hears this voice and he can kind of think back to speak to it. And shortly thereafter, when he was outside one day in his, you know, beautiful rural little environment, he kind of felt like going deeper into the woods, and saw in a clearing in the woods, there was a pear-shaped object sitting on three or four legs on the ground. And in front of it was an elderly-looking man who said he appeared to be 90 or 95 years old to young Meyer. At the time, we are told later on that he was well over 900 years old, and that's just another little anecdote here. But he said the man was dressed in what appeared to be a deep-sea diver's outfit without a helmet. And he kind of, you know, his version, I guess, of, you know, what an astronaut's outfit or a space traveler's outfit would look like. And he said he felt absolutely no fear. The man just had a very pleasant, gentle, safe demeanor. And that began his face-to-face contacts and conversations. He was taken on board the ship. He was taken up above the earth in the course of time with Svoth, who was teaching and tutoring him, and also put a device on his head to inculcate information and, you know, knowledge about things from the past and the future and about himself, his own existence, over the years, he was also taken and shown things like the moon and other planets and what have you, none of which are inhabited as we know it. And by the time he was 7 years of age, it was said that he had the thinking capacity of a 35-year-old man. Mm-hmm. Now, in the early stages of this, when he was feeling a little bit, you know, like what's going on, although it didn't freak him out completely, he went and turned to the parish priest, Father Zimmerman. And Father Zimmerman was a priest, I don't know, maybe a Protestant denomination or something there, and he had apparently been prepared through his own contact with Svath for this whole thing and told that young Meyer is, you know, going to be coming to him and, you know, he can assure him that this is all right, and all of that kind of transpired, and it's pretty much the way Billy himself tells the story. And his contacts with Svath lasted for about 11 years.
Wow. Now, who are the Pleiarans, actually?
Well, what we're told here is that the Pleiaran are a fully human race, virtually indistinguishable from us. We, you know, they're human beings. They're not little gray guys or insects or reptoids or any of this nonsense generated by military disinformation in Hollywood to get people all screwy, which succeeds to a degree. And that their forefathers, in many cases, were the gods of our antiquity, the gods of our religions. And because these forefathers, these gods, sent us off in some pretty, at least according to them, miserable directions with belief systems that were not true and all sorts of other unpleasant stuff, that they feel a kind of obligation to try to help us, to help ourselves to get out of the mess we're in, but without direct interference in our world and society as a whole. They're not coming to land. They're not going to interact with a bunch of people. They and some of their, you know, ancestors throughout time, subsequent to the earlier gods, have interacted with certain people on the planet, very select, small number, who were in the past specific prophets, is the way we would look at them. But they were tutored and mentored, and they were in direct contact with some of the forefathers of these Pleiaran to try to help us get information into our world, to reroute us out of our religious delusions and things like that. And they have to admit that it has not been, you know, it was never really that successful for certain very specific reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings to mind something that was in the DVD where Billy was talking about the fact that the knowledge that our gods, so to speak, were alien is kind of a theological upset, or can be, that, you know, all along the gods that we were praying to way back when was not the same gods that organized religion asks us to believe in.
Well, yes and no, I guess you could say. How to put it, there were, in addition to the Pleiaran ancestor gods, others of different lineages. We are told the universe is literally full of human life at various levels of technological and spiritual development, and good, bad, and the ugly. There were others who came here who were very, very much intent on enslaving humanity, and did through religion and other things. And sometimes simultaneously, there were more benevolent gods. If you look at the Old Testament, of which I am definitely not a scholar and only got into it, you know, relatively recently in my life when I was searching out information in the Meyer case, you'll see that, okay, we have Moses with the Ten Commandments, one of which is thou shalt not murder, meaning we should not kill innocent people. Mm-hmm. In the same testament, in the Old Testament, we have the supposed God telling Joshua and telling, I guess, in the book of Daniel and Moses and all this stuff, telling the Israelites to go and kill every man, woman, child, and infant in their mother's arms without mercy in the process of stealing the lands from the Canaanites to establish the state of Israel. Well, it struck me as contradictory that on one hand, the presumed creator of the universe is saying, thou shalt not murder, kill innocents, and go out and murder and kill innocents. So the more I kind of looked into certain aspects of biblical and other texts, and again, not super extensively, the more I realized that what was being written about in the Meyer case was most likely more of the truth. And, you know, developing understanding of a lot of the information that's in this. There's 25,000 pages of information in the Meyer case, most still in German. I don't read it well enough to understand it all, but I've read a significant amount of, you know, all the English language translations, and it's pretty mind-boggling stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, this whole thing is extremely mind-boggling. Now, I'm going to speed up a couple of years until Billy was an adult. And, you know, being associated with extraterrestrials is almost not as exciting as the life that he yeah. was leading at that time. His alter ego was called the Phantom. He worked for Middle Eastern people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as kind of, you know, getting rid of assassins. I mean, it's lovely. I mean, he was in the Foreign Legion and everything. He's been the victim of several assassination attempts on his own, and he's been called a cross between Indiana Jones, Lawrence of Arabia, and Han Solo. I mean, that's rather amazing.
He is, in my opinion, knowing Billy, as I say, for about 10 years myself, and of course knowing even more about him from the reading, I would say he's the single most interesting human being that's ever lived. And he's not somebody that when you meet him that he bowls you over with a big personality and a guru grin and you know, flashy behavior. He's very balanced, present, normal human being. He, during the, I guess, late 50s, early 60s, he was known as the Phantom. He was hired by police departments in West Pakistan, India, and Turkey to bring in mass murderers and killers who were very, very rough characters. And he told me straight to my face, because he did, he packed a 44 Magnum, and he was and remained a crack shot with a handgun. It's an amazing whole thing. But he said he never killed anybody. He says, no, I have shot people only in self-defense to wound them if they drew weapons on me so that the authorities could then come and apprehend them. So he was not an assassin himself, of course, and he has been the target of 21 documented assassination attempts.
Yeah, and you know, when you watch the DVD, I mean, he is such now an unassuming looking yeah. man, very soft spoken, very gentle. His appearance certainly, you know, belies the fact that he had such an incredible life up till now. But throughout this, he still had the contact with the Pleiadians. I can't even say that now. It's just absolutely amazing. When we come back, we're going to have to take a break in a minute, but when we come back, there were a couple of very interesting things in the DVD in regards to his adventures, which is maybe not the right word for it, but his life story that really kind of got my interest really good. So I think we're ready to go to break. And Mike, if we are, take us away.
Marla Brooks will be right back after these brief messages.
Wherever there's a pool, there's always a flirt. Anytime the school, there'll always be homework. Wherever there's a beat, there's always a drum. Anytime there's fun, there's always Coca-Cola. The stars will always shine, the birds always sing. As long as there is thirst, there's always the real thing. Coca-Cola's always the one. Whenever there is fun, there's always Coca-Cola. Ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-ba-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da, always Coca-Cola. Ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-ba-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da, always Coca-Cola.
If you listen to only one paranormal show this week, then tune in to CAPS Paranormal Radio. But if you're going to tune in to two shows this week, then tune in to Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. However, if you're going to tune in to 25 shows or more this week, then make sure you catch Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Friday nights from 10 till midnight, or watch them live on GTV. Side effects of listening to Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie include painful belly cramps and uncontrollable fits from laughing too hard and the occasional warts. If laughter lasts more than 4 hours, consult your doctor right away. Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Fridays, 10 to midnight. It'll either kill you or cure you. Either way, you'll be happy you watched. Tune in to The Paranormal View with Henry and Beth, Saturdays, for a frank discussion on everything supernatural.
Everyone loves to hear a good educational debate, don't they?
The Paranormal View. With Henry's fresh perspective and Beth's 20 years of investigative experience, they tackle the topics you want to hear.
Any topic considered paranormal could be covered during the show.
Seeking answers. Presented in a roundtable style, The Paranormal View brings together experts, enthusiasts, and listeners with varied points of view.
We're not here to try to persuade either one of the sides to believe like the other one.
The real and the unknown. They also bring together believers and skeptics in their regular series called The Skeptic Tank.
You know, sometimes you have to be on the other side of the fence, don't you?
That's true.
The Paranormal View. That's every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, with Henry and Beth.
It's going to be a great show.
The Paranormal View, where every point of view is welcome.
All right, that sounds good.
Hi, this is Marla Brooks from Stirring the Cauldron. And nobody stirs it up better with our loved ones on the other side than Ron Reeder, the man who talks to angels. Please tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Central and make a connection.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, once again, here's Marla Brooks.
Yes, we're in the X-Files. No, not exactly. We're talking to Michael Horn, and we are talking about the Billy Myers story. And it's totally fascinating. And Michael, one of the things in the DVD that caught my eye was the fact that these extraterrestrials were responsible for Billy meeting such world figures as Mahatma Gandhi and Haile Selassie, who it seems knew about them as well. So that makes me think that other government leaders are well aware of the same thing. What's your take on that?
Aware of the same thing in what sense?
The fact that they know that there are other people out there, other extraterrestrials that are in contact with us at different times. And, you know, like a big government hush-hush, they're not telling everybody else.
Well, let's put it this way. It started in 1915 that there was a cover-up, and that started during the First World War. According to the information in the Meyer case, over the battlefields of Europe, there were disks that were sighted, and each side at first thought it was from the other side, but uncannily, nobody was ever being attacked by these objects, so they finally figured out that it wasn't coming from this world. And there was a conspiracy of silence that started at that time and was continued also through many of our, you know, administrations. And what happened is that and it's interesting because of what you played as a lead-in, during the Roosevelt administration, according to the information in the Meyer case, Roosevelt had, through his intelligence services, a program created whereby the work of an author named H.G. Wells would be read and performed as a radio show by, of course, the great Orson Welles, and it was indeed War of the Worlds. And the purpose behind this was, since there was a mounting awareness in governments of the existence of other races, extraterrestrial races, they wanted to create as much fear about the idea to demonize aliens, quote-unquote, so that people would be more afraid, they wouldn't be so curious, they wouldn't also start to become fearful that they couldn't be protected by their own governments. All of these things, which on a certain level may be understandable, if not tragically short-sighted, and, you know, very, very detrimental to us.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, up until this day, I think all of us seem to think that they know things that they're not telling us, and as you said, the scare tactic probably in the long run didn't work. But the other thing that I found interesting was the fact that these ETs had something to do with the Nazis in World War II.
What happened was either these or another race working with them or one of their, you know, some of their own groups thought that the Germans would be the right people to give technology to that would be advanced and could be used to help bring about a more global, peaceful coexistence with people. And I don't even can't give you a great defense or explanation as to why. However, one of the things that has been, you know, part of this case and gets, I have to speak about it now and then, is they did not necessarily look deeply into us as a species in certain ways. They took us pretty much in many ways at so-called face value. The problem is when they were compelled to look deeper, and I think this thing with the Germans was part of the impetus, but not the only thing. Because what they ultimately did when they saw that the Germans were moving towards Nazism, they input into the plans for these objects defects that would render them not fully capable of all the things that they otherwise would have been. The Germans, the Nazis, did possess some of these discs towards the latter part, if not the earlier, you know, the mid part of the Second World War, and some of them, after the war, managed to escape to South America with some of these objects. The plans fell into the hands of the U.S., Canada, Britain, and I think Russia. And subsequent to that, also perhaps France and China have developed alternative-type craft. So what most of the things that are cited to these days, and there are plenty of sightings here and there, are said by the Pleiaren to not be extraterrestrial in nature, that they are primarily either certain natural phenomenon, or if they are real objects and not natural phenomenon, they are generally secret military or a secret group craft that is, you know, also still used for this purpose of disinforming and creating fear and terror among people. What is it? There's a new movie out, the fourth something rather about Contact, and the 2012 is coming. You know, it's all demonization of ETs and fear-mongering, because that is how control is kept. And they said so-called alien abductions have been so few and far between, and the ones that have occurred have not been malevolent, but that those that actually do occur, when there are real abductions and not just mass hysteria and sleep paralysis and all this, they are basically secret military operations, part and parcel of this whole agenda, which is also tied into very, very big finance and weapons manufacturing contracts and, you know, a kind of insidious thing. And I'm not particularly even a conspiracy theorist, but some of that is what's contained in the information in this case.
Hmm. Well, let me move up a little bit in time. Now, Spath actually passed away, and Billy was introduced to others. And he was taken on trips into the past and the future. And I know the future is something he doesn't really want to talk much about. But the prophecies are something that he has spoke of.
Yes.
And I think we should talk a little about some of the predictions that he was given. Some that have come true already. And there are those that have yet to be. Because I think, you know, that's the whole point of them being in touch with him. Because from what I understood, they're trying to help us get out of a mess that we're in.
Yes. They would like very much for us to not destroy ourselves. And it doesn't take an extraterrestrial or a Swiss farmer to have the point of view that we are in very deep, you know, trouble as a species on every level. And to answer what you're talking about, let me just tell you and your listeners, in 51, Meyer warned about climate change. In 58, specifically spoke about global warming, mentioned that it was a natural occurrence that would be accelerated 75% human-caused in the future, talked about the melting of the glaciers, environmental damage, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, you name it. He predicted so many things. Fortunately, we can prove, not on all of them can we prove yet the dates, but on most of the important ones we can show and prove that they were predicted in published, you know, documents and books prior to their occurring.
Mm-hmm. And what about some of the things? I know there's some information about World War III that is actually fairly disturbing. Nothing that probably we haven't already surmised, but you want to go ahead and talk a little bit about
that? Yeah. World War III is not a prediction. It's a prophecy. And it is something that has been avoided, actually, for some time. We could have been in a Third World War, I think, as early as the 90s. And it is because there are, you know, a significant number of people, maybe not yet in the kind of numbers that we really think of as significant, but people who really care about peace. There's a peace meditation that we are told the Pleiaren and about 3.2 billion other humans do on our behalf several times a month. There are groups on the planet that do it. I'm involved in a group that does this peace meditation as well. We have information about it on the website. And they say that that and the, you know, the energy is of and intentions of other people working for peace that may know nothing about this case have been instrumental in forestalling a Third World War.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question that just popped into my head is, why do the Pleiaren care about us to begin with? Why are they trying to help us? How does that benefit them?
Well, as I said, the first thing that I was alluding to was their connection to us ancestrally. But they say that kind of, if you want to use the term loosely, you know, in the cosmic order, the more advanced has a certain obligation to try to assist the less advanced, less developed, without interfering, without shocking a culture, without ruling over it, but rather to help it, you know, climb the ladder that the other civilization is already several rungs up on, to lend a helping hand. And that we understand this behavior when we look at some of our own altruism and helpfulness that human beings, you know, frequently will extend to others, either individually or, you know, collectively, and that this is the better part of humanity to want to help. When I don't want to fumble on this too much, but there are things that were done genetically to our distant ancestors which have handicapped us from being or yet becoming what they call true human beings. We have unnaturally short lifespans and unnaturally high aggression, both of which are said to be the result of genetic manipulations done literally millions of years ago, not even on this world, but on ancestors of ours on another world. And it is their hope that they can contribute to supporting our peaceful evolution while we and our scientists are going about discovering and rectifying these two very specific genetic, you know, manipulations, and that can then contribute to giving us individually more time to evolve, to mature as people, to be less aggressive towards each other. We can still have a healthy fighting spirit and instinct for survival, but we're way over the top in aggression and violence.
I guess the most obvious question is, they're helping us to achieve these things. Couldn't they step in some way and speed the process up a little bit? Why? Because it may take us, you know, another 100 years or so to get to that point. Do we have to take the baby steps instead of having them just kind of like show us the way?
Well, there's a couple answers here, like they are and they can't, simultaneously, paradoxically coexisting. They are by virtue of inputting this information, albeit seemingly quite obliquely, to a seemingly quite obscure, non-powerful individual. However, they know that we are, not everybody, but huge numbers, literally billions of people, are so heavily religiously indoctrinated, meaning that we are programmed at cellular levels to become dependent on outside forces and completely antithetical to the core teaching of this case, which is complete and total self-responsibility. We are so far from that, that for more advanced beings to step in, the results would produce, we would have worship of them on one level. We'd have great fear among other people. There would be psychosis, suicide, attempted attacks on them, attacks on other people because of, you know, our psychosis, such as, you know, we could even presume lightly this, you know, this murderer at the Fort Hood base, whatever set him off, just we don't know at this moment, but he killed his fellow soldiers, his fellow humans next to him, out of whatever, fear, anger, who knows. So if we suddenly had an infusion into our world of people who don't do war anymore, they can defend themselves, but they don't do war, they're not climbing over each other's bodies for the last scrap of food or a green piece of paper, they don't mug each other in their streets and alleys, if they have any that way, they are so different in that way that we would be thrown into dependency and fear and in a mixture and set ourselves back evolutionarily. We don't have 100 years to get to the goal. According to the information of the case, the full realization of this goal, which has been in process for some long time, is about 700 to 800 years.
Does any of this play into 2012? Which is a very hot topic these days.
2012, we have, you know, on my website, it's interesting that we're speaking, in addition to having an article up there, and I'll answer more specifically, an article that does deal with 2012, we also have an article on information given to Meyer about Merlin, King Arthur, and Excalibur, and other things, which I found enormously eye-opening. But to jump to 2012, and you may enjoy that article, and you're listening.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I was sitting here smiling at that. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, the 2012 thing, they said, look, there are several things. Number one, the Mayan did a calendar that ended with an event whereby the Earth appears to be nestled into the Milky Way in a certain way. And the Mayan didn't do another calendar, not just because it wasn't because it's the end of the world. It's because they basically, it was the end for them. They were suffering from droughts and famine, and they had to migrate. They were decimated. They had resorted to cannibalism. Also, it wasn't the romantic, we are, you know, we're going into another dimension story that the New Agers would like us to embrace. So on top of that, there are going to be solar flares or storms of a, you know, ultimate magnitude, capping off an 11-year cycle at that time, we're told. And there is going to be a lot of electronic disturbance, and we're moving into a time with more geophysical environmental damage that we have set in motion. So it isn't the 2012 apocalypse that many people actually are trying to bring about in their, you know, ignorance and fear. It's that it is a time wherein there will be intensifications of certain unpleasant things, but it's also largely up to us how we deal with the challenges. And those people who are into this religious apocalypse and Armageddon thing, they are the ones who are going to experience it in their own person, and they contribute to bringing it to the world through the focus on this negative. It is not something that is truly foretold and foreordained for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it always kind of ties in one thing into another. It's really kind of fascinating how you talk about one thing, it ties into the next down the line. And again, I'm finding this terribly fascinating. And we're going to go to another break in just a minute, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Talmud Emmanuel, which is quite, quite interesting. So everybody, get up, stretch your legs, take a walk around the room, and we'll be right back with Michael Horn right after this break.
You worked too hard, you ate too much, the cheesecake made you greedy, but your aching head and stomach hear this message from Old Speedy. Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz, fizz, oh, what a relief it is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz, oh, what a relief it is. Ah, those speedy Alka-Seltzer bubbles burst into action to relieve your upset stomach and aching head fast. It's only as directed. Oh, what a relief it is. What a relief.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back in just a moment. The changes in the world today are moving faster than ever before.
And it's good to know there's someone who can help keep it all in perspective. Psychic medium and paranormal life consultant and renowned author, Rick Hayes, can help you get through these tough times. Through prayer, faith, and guidance, Rick Hayes can take you on a path to acknowledge the appreciation of life's gift. Amazing and very real, the best in what he does, states the producers of the highly acclaimed film, The Possessed. Rick Hayes, founder of Life's Gift Incorporated, offers personal as well as group consultations. As a renowned and well-respected speaker, Rick is available to appear at your next event. For more information, go to www.lifesgift.com. Rick Hayes, living life supernaturally.
Hey, this is Big Brother Mike. Join me every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon for The Morning X.
It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
Listen on Para X and watch the live video on the Paranormal Television Network. That's every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till noon on Para X and the Paranormal Television Network. See you there.
Rock and roll, yeah.
Sometimes good intentions aren't good enough, and we need a little help to make it through the workday. Some people pray, others put their noses to the grindstone. But now you can take a different path and resolve workplace issues in a magical way. From the author of the Ghost of Hollywood series comes a brand new book, Workplace Spells, Everyday Magic on the Job, by leading author Marla Brooks. This easy-to-follow magical spellbook will help you get past those pesky job-related hurdles. Whether you're new to the craft or a seasoned practitioner, you can make magic happen. Look for Workplace Spells, Everyday Magic on the Job, by Marla Brooks.
Available now, online, and wherever fine books are sold.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, once again, here's Marla Brooks.
Love that. It's one of my favorite scores from one of my favorite movies, actually. Well, welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron, and we are talking to Michael Horn, and we're talking about a very fascinating man, Billy Meier, the Billy Meier story. And Michael, one of the things that I was reading about was an ancient document that Billy found and published called the Talmud Emmanuel. And it is touted as so heretical that it threatens to overturn the core belief of all of the world's major religions. And I think we need to touch on that just a little bit.
Sure. In 1963, Meyer went to Jerusalem and met with a friend whose name was Isa Rashid. Rashid had already once or more times had been led, apparently telepathically, to the outskirts of Old Jerusalem and found a kind of hillside. It looked like, you know, a hill or hillside. And when Meyer came, they went back to this area, and Meyer noticed that there was a small hole on, you know, in some part of the lower part of this hillside that he proceeded to dig open. And he and Rashid entered, and with their flashlights found themselves in a quite ancient and obviously abandoned tomb. There wasn't anything visible in it except stones on the floor, and so they went about lifting stones here and there to see if there was anything underneath the stones. And Meyer had, and this is another amazing part of the story, but he had been prepared for this through a time travel trip going back to 32 AD. Well, we'll jump from that to say that they found underneath some of these stones, resin encrusted, animal skin wrapped scrolls or leaves of scroll that were preserved and were written in Aramaic. Mm-hmm. Now, it would be that Isa Rashid, in addition to speaking whatever his native tongue was and German, also could read and write Aramaic. And so he was entrusted with the scrolls, which he took back to his home in Jerusalem, to begin a translation process, which lasted for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. At that point, in 1970, he sent to Meyer a German language translation of what amounted to about a third of the scrolls. And he told Billy that he may not be in touch for a while because certain people, certain powerful people with a couple major religions had found out about these scrolls, and he and his family were going to be on the run. Mm-hmm. And indeed, yeah, they ended up going into Lebanon, and they took the scrolls with them, and they hid them in the walls of one of the buildings there. And then, within a very short period of time, that particular village, that specific village, was attacked by the Israelis and virtually leveled. And there's news reports about it, no reports about the Talmud, but the Talmud was apparently destroyed or taken into possession by the Israelis, and Isa Rashid and his family escaped with their lives and headed into Iraq. Meyer learned about 4 years later that Rashid and his family had been machine gunned to death by the Israelis, probably the Mossad, in Baghdad. So Meyer is sitting there with this translation, which he publishes several years later in German, and calls it the Talmud Immanuel. It then gets published in English somewhere in early 90s or so. It attracts the attention of a man named James Dierdorf, who's a retired professor from Oregon State University. And Dierdorf thinks, well, I think we've got another Bible hoax here. I'm going to take a look at this. His studies over the period of a couple years result in his publishing a book called Celestial Teachings. And in that book, he declares his own finding, which is this Talmud Immanuel is the original material upon which the book of Matthew is based, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. It resolves over 325 inconsistencies that scholars have noted in Matthew, some 125 of which were not noted at the time that the Talmud was either originally discovered, first published in German, or even in English. And he then goes line by line, and he explains how the resolution of these things are, and it's really an amazing thing. He's very impressed with it, put it mildly. So what we have here, according to him, is the original writing and the original teaching, we should say, of a man named Immanuel, who we knew as Jesus Christ, which is a fictionalized person based on Immanuel.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty heavy when you start thinking about it. So what Billy published was not the complete book then, because it was destroyed, right?
And that's correct. What we're told is that which we really needed to get in order to have, you know, the essence of this teaching from Immanuel is conveyed therein. And one of the things that's quite remarkable that to me authenticates it, in this book, this man Immanuel foretells a future time. In 2 millennium from his own time, he says, when greedy people in their hunger for power and might are going to ignite the very oil of the earth and darken the skies for an extended period of time. Now remember, this is discovered in 63, translated by 70, first published in 78. The darkened skies from oil fires took place during the Gulf War in 1991, 13 years after the Talmud was published in German. And there's other things in there, too, that are pretty, you know, eye-opening and sobering and what have you. So the thing about the rest of the teaching is this. Meyer himself has just finished writing a book which translates into English as The Goblet of Truth. And it is ostensibly the same teaching that six prophets before him have brought, and each expressed in their own time in their own way, but it's essentially the same timeless teaching that they call the teaching of creation, the teaching of truth, of spirit, and of life. And that which we have always been deprived of, and which has each time that it has been brought to us, been corrupted and turned into one religion or another, so that people could hide the truth and control the masses.
Now, you said this latest Book of Billy's is in English translation. Is the Talmud Emmanuel also?
The Talmud Emmanuel isn't the latest book. It's the second latest.
No.
Yes, it is translated into English. We have it on our website at theyfly.com. And the other book that Meyer finished, an amazing chore, is complete in German, but there's only four chapters right now available in English, and they are available again for free, linked from my website. So while we definitely want people to be able to see the film that you've seen, there is, you know, a ton of free info, so people can decide if they even want to, you know, see more, and they can see my site.
And you want to give that website address again, please, because I've had a couple of people already in private chat ask me for more information.
Sure. Theyfly, TheyFly, theyfly.com.
All right. In the couple of minutes we have left, I think I want to talk a little bit about some of the photos and videos that Billy has taken over the years, which surprisingly, not surprisingly actually, have come into fire from time to time. It seems like it started a long time ago, and things just keep getting better and better and better as they go. Some of the things are not just UFOs in the sky. There are pictures that I saw on the DVD of craft landed, like the wedding cake ship.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about some of that.
Sure. Meyer first started taking his photographs in 1964 in India, up to eight of the craft at a time. There's a witness there, a woman who came forward some years ago. She's now a retired UN diplomat. She witnessed all this, a very credible person. Meyer lost his left arm in 1965 in a terrible accident in Turkey. And after that point, starting in 75, he began to take all these incredible photos, films, video, sound recordings. He was giving metal alloy samples. And lots of these have already been examined and everything. And I personally issued a challenge to the top international professional skeptics who were claiming that this was all a hoax to duplicate even one of Meyer's photos in one of his films. They accepted the challenge in 2001, and they fall on their face handily and failed. In our film, The Billy Meyer Story, we have a segment that we gave to a skeptic to make his best case, and of course I do some answering in there. After the film was out, after he made his whole presentation, he had to retract his premise. He thought that Meyer used model trees and model UFOs, but he can't prove it at all. And we have been able to establish with new articles and new analysis on the website that Meyer has taken photos, films, video of actual large, very large objects that do not originate on this planet, and it's no models, no hoax. I had the winners of Special Effects Academy Award Uncharted Territory look at Meyer's films. They said, nope, those aren't models. We know models. Those aren't models. So we're dealing with something amazing in physical evidence, even more amazing in informational evidence, and all happening, coming out of one little rural location in Switzerland with one-armed man who refused to be stopped by threats and assassination attempts and what have you.
Now, Billy continues to be in contact with the Pleiadians. Does he talk about, well, how often he meets with them?
It's fairly regular. There are times when they say we're going on vacation or we have somewhere else to go or whatever. But on a monthly basis, and sometimes even more, he's in touch with them, and he meets with primarily with two or three people, but there are others who do come and meet with him as well for various reasons. He's met with, I don't know, at this point probably 50 different humans, mainly Pleiaren, but some from other races as well. There are people there that have witnessed as many as 33 of the ships in the sky at one time. There were 236 UFO radar sightings by the Swiss Military Air Safety Unit above Meyer's land in a two-year period. I mean, this is an incredible and intense thing that's going on. And We can, you know, we can barely, you know, just scratch the surface, so to speak, with this. So,
well, yeah, and we have barely scratched the surface. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know, when you were describing the ships over the house, I mean, is it just like, okay, we're coming to visit? Do they, and I'm not trying to make light of this, but do they beam down? Do they beam him up? Do they, how does this work?
Well, there are times where they still take him places on board ship. Most of the time they simply beam into his office. In last May when I was there, and the funny part is I don't care that much about UFOs. I've seen UFOs and it's kind of like, okay, it's somebody else's car, as the lady says in her film. But friends of mine, there were several people I know who stayed late at night, and the Pleiaren have a regular monitoring task where they have a ship, usually unmanned ships, that come over the center, and they're constantly monitoring our world as well. And one night, somebody said, hey, Billy, come out here. And there was one of the ships was very bright in the sky, and Billy turned to the person who I know and said, do you want me to turn it off? And she looked at him and said, what? And he looked up at the sky, and the light went out, and he went back in. About 5 or 8 minutes later, he came out, and he said, well, Quetzal told me not to do that. They need that on, so I'm turning it back on. He looks up at the sky, the light went back on, and off he went. And this is, I mean, I know it sounds very bizarre, but Meyer has done more amazing things. It's amazing enough, the life he's lived, but people have seen him do some rather radical things over the years, and it's not surprising. So he sometimes plays some games, I guess.
Well, you know, one of the catchphrases as we end here on the DVD asks if this might be the biggest hoax or the most important story in human history. Where do you fall in on that one?
Well, for me, it's clearly, because I basically formulated that question, I would say to me, you know, it's clearly the most important story in human history to me. People say, well, what if you find out it's a hoax? I'll say, well, I want to know how he did it, you know, because I couldn't do it. And just by the way, I am going to be speaking in L.A. if this event is still going on November 14th. Anybody that's interested can email me, and anybody that buys the movie from us, I'm going to give them a free gift if they mention your show or mention your name.
Oh, great.
A free $25 CD with tons of Meyer material on it. So I just wanted to get that in. But, yeah, I come down. It's the most important story in human history. It's ironclad. The man does not contradict himself. He's beaten NASA to major announcements on astronomical information time and again. You know, he foretold the two U.S. wars with Iraq, the second one under a president who'd be the son of a former president. It would lead to an unbelievable disaster. He named AIDS 1958, he's foretelling AIDS, Iraq wars, computers interlinked, you know, electronically around the world. It's 162 things. Again, visit the website. You're going to see so much stuff that you can visit in weeks.
Give us the website one more time.
Okay, if you insist.
Yes.
theyfly.com.
All right. Well, we've got to run, but thank you so much for sharing this amazing story. I know it's just the tip of the iceberg, but great food for thought, and we will probably continue this as time goes on. We're out of time, guys, but please stay tuned for Mark Nelson with Positively Psychic. His guest tonight is Esteban Fazekas. I'm not saying this right, so just hang in there and listen to it, and they'll tell you the right thing. He's from the Edgar Cayce Institute. And until next time, everyone, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.